Good morning, everyone, and thanks again for joining us for today's session. I'm just going to go through a couple quick slides before I hand it off to our panelists to take over. First of all, we are recording this session. We will be posting it to our stakeholder engagement page within the next few days. So if for any reason you have to hop off the call or you're unable to attend today at all, we will have that recording available to you shortly. If you have any concerns or questions about that recording, feel free to contact the information below here, our Director of Information and Governance Services, and they can answer any of your questions for you. Next slide, just on, I know we've probably done this many, many times, but for anyone who is maybe in summer vacation mode, there are two ways to ask questions in our Zoom webinar. You can raise your hand, and then as the host, I'll be notified and I can unmute you and you'll be able to unmute on your side and ask your question. After you're done asking your question, if you can lower your hand so that we can get through all of the participants that want to ask their questions. You're also able to type in your questions into the Q&A button. And you're also, as participants, able to upvote those questions for your, you know, the questions that you're most interested in hearing first. So we will try and get to those as we're able to throughout the presentation. If you're accessing our webinar through the phone lines, you can hit *9 and I'll see that you've raised your hand and I'll be able to unmute you. You'll just unmute on your end using *6. Other than that, if you have any technical issues or difficulties, feel free to send me an email. I'm listed as the contact on the engagement page. The chat function is not available on this session. So if you have any issues or technical concerns, just feel free to send me an email and I'll assist you as I can. So with that, I think I will hand it over to our Vice President of Grid Reliability Operations, Marie-France Samaroden.
Thanks, Jennifer. So welcome, everyone, and good morning. I'm Marie-France Samaroden, the VP of Grid Reliability Operations. And also with me on the panel is Rob Davidson, the VP Grid Reliability Projects and Planning. We are jointly accountable for sustaining the reliability in Alberta through the transformation. So you will see us tag team this presentation and the ongoing actions we will need to progress in the future. I'd also like to introduce you to Miranda Keating Erickson, our VP of Markets. Miranda will be presenting with us today. It's important to note that reliability and the market are highly connected. And so we will be working closely with Miranda and her team as we progress actions forward. We have a fair bit of important material to cover with all of you today. So we will be moving fairly quickly through the slides. We recognize some of this material may be somewhat technical. That said, we think it is important that the industry understands to a certain degree the reliability challenges we are and will be facing in the future. And unfortunately, reliability of a power system is quite technical. We will have, as Jennifer said, a Q&A at the end and are prepared to stay longer to answer questions as needed. And so turning ourselves to the slide in front of us, I think we just need to, can we go back one? Oh, never mind. I think we're missing one. But and so what I did want to just maybe mention is that most of you would have seen the ISO's strategic plan that's posted on our website. What we are talking about today is directly connected to our strategic plan and specifically the strategic actions associated with reliability enabling the transformation as highlighted. So do we want to, I'm not sure, Rob, if this is quite the right deck.
Yeah, I mean, it is the master slide deck that I have very much. So.
Oh, okay. We'll keep going. We'll make sure we work through this one then. All right. So as you can see on the screen, these are our key principles that we will use to guide our decision making as we progress the actions forward. There are a few objectives, though, before I do turn things over to Rob that I did want to make sure to cover today. And so we We have a number of them. We want to share our process and plans to sustain reliability through the transformation. We want to explain our reliability needs areas and how we currently address them. We want to share our reliability need areas and how they are impacted by increasing renewable penetration. And we want to share priorities for action in the frequency response needs area and explain the connection to other ISO initiatives. And so as we are equally focused on ensuring alignment and coordination with other related ISO initiatives, particularly those that connect to the frequency response need area. It's important to note that this is a high-level contextual discussion about a number of issues and how they are all connected. It won't, however, be a deep dive on solutions. Those are yet to come, but today will help to provide context for our future conversation. I'll now turn things over to Rob.
Great. Thanks, Mary France, and good morning, everyone. It's my pleasure to be speaking with everyone today as we discuss sustaining reliability through the transformation of our grid. The first section for today that I will be want to talk about is communicating the ISO's process that we use to plan and sustain reliability here in Alberta. And I do want to as Mary France talked about, there's lots of material to go through. We're not going to be going over, somewhat quickly. So if you do have questions on clarity as we move through some of the technical pieces, just use the Q&A within there. And Dennis Freilich's going to be monitoring that. If you can answer some of the quicker questions, he'll feel free to answer those within that. So I'm moving on here now to, let's see, it's on slide. So this is on slide 8 in the slide deck that I have, but this is all around the process. And so this is the purpose of the slide is to show the process that we use. There's lots of detail on the slide. I'm not going to be going over everything on the slide deck here, but really at a high level, our process is to analyze reasonable future scenarios that we have. And of course, if that's from our 2021 LTO through our net zero and ultimately into our 2023 LTO, we then assess impacts on our core mandate, and that being system planning, grid reliability, and our market structure. When we do those assessments, we will look to identify potential future gaps or changes that we see are required. And those assessments will result in, three action plans or roadmaps. The first one, I'm sure you're all pretty familiar with, that's our long-term transmission plan. And the second one, which is going to be a new one, and that's really what we're here to talk about today, is our reliability report. Or reliability roadmap, you'll probably hear us interchange those words. And that's going to be a new plan that's going to focus on issues such as frequency and inertia, ramping, system strength, all those type of issues. And the thirdly is our scenario-based assessments are also fed into our market evolution and any market-related initiatives that the ISO intends to progress. In each of those action plans, we have solutions that will get driven out of those. And those solutions may be system NIDs, or they could be changes or modifications or new rule changes, whether they're technical rules or market rules. And there's potential for market-based solutions to come out of this as well. We do have a feedback loop that we will be monitoring the actual pace of change. Feedback is important from a continuous improvement perspective. And we're going to use this to help us assess the pace of change and the action needed and the inputs into the future scenarios on that. And from a repeatable perspective, these are action plans that we'll continue to progress with. We'll need to be reviewing them annually or biannually or as required, depending upon which action plan. So I'm going to move on to, actually, I'm just going to do a double check just on the slide stuff. So is the page numbers, are the page numbers correct on this at all? Can I, either Jen or Mary France, peek in? So as I'm referencing, because I know people are on the deck and what we posted out online.
The page numbers are off by one number, but otherwise okay. It's the same. There was just one extra slide at the beginning and the other one.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Okay, so this this slide here. So I'll be actually be on really kind of slide 10. So this is on our, we're planning on a, you know, a regular cycle here. So you can see that the levels of renewable capability, you know, capacity has continued to increase, you know, over the past several years from our clean tech scenario through to our net zero pathway. And we're going to continue to identify future scenarios into our 2023 LPO. I want to highlight that in June of this year, we did publish our flexibility report on our website, which assesses a portion of our reliability needs based upon the clean tech scenario. You know, and that's mainly focused on net demand variability conditions and ramping. We are planning on updating this analysis in the second half of this year, adding additional reliability areas, such as the frequency and inertia, what I previously talked to. And we're going to be using the highest renewable scenario from our net zero work when we do that assessment. And so from all this work, we're planning on publishing a 2023 reliability roadmap, and we'll plan on publishing that in the first half of next year. And this will replace the flexibility, ongoing flexibility reports, and become one of two primary you know, reports, being one being the LTP and the second being the reliability roadmap. And again, we will repeat this process, you know, every year or two as needed, and update our analysis and update our reliability roadmap to help inform the industry of the pending reliability challenges that we foresee and any actions that we think we'll need to be taking to address those challenges going forward. Now that we talked about the high-level process, I just wanted to talk about renewable penetration, you know, and its impact on reliability, which is going to be the predominant driver for reliability into the foreseeable future. So on this slide, so this is slide 11, you can see that reliability of the grid is not just a, you know, it's not just a long-term thing about supply inadequacy. It's all around the time spectrum. And so reliability starts from seconds through to minutes, through to hours, and through to years from that, on that perspective. So we're going to be looking at each of these different time domains. So with this graph here, this chart is all about the near-term Alberta trend for renewable penetration. And so I want to focus on the blue line, which is our the Alberta trend that we have. And what you can see is that by 2024, we're anticipating it to reach about 30% on a capacity basis, which is about 5 years faster than our clean tech scenario, but is in line with the renewable rush scenario from that perspective. And I want to point out here that from a renewable rush scenario, which is what we're going to be looking at in our reliability roadmap, it attains about a 40% on a capacity perspective. So that's the level at which we're going to be looking at in our reliability roadmap. You will also notice on this slide that we have Ireland's Airgrid renewable penetration capacity. And this is really to show you that they've reached 40% capacity. They've done that reliably. And they're targeting to reach 70% by 2030. Now, they have already undertaken numerous actions and thoughtful planning to get to this 40% level. We believe that we can learn from them as well as other jurisdictions. So we'll continue to engage and improve upon our learnings from similar jurisdictions. This next slide here is all around power frequency, primary frequency response. So that the power system, it's obviously it's a complicated machine, and reliability just isn't about, you know, again, the supply, you know, generation supply and transmission capacity. We need to deliver it across, you know, all the time spectrums. And in primary frequency response, this of course is the generator response and droop control, and it's essential for reliability to the grid. And so what we have done is we have analyzed the primary frequency response we expect to get from all generation in the Alberta system. And this chart shows the probability distribution curves for 2019, 2020, 2021, and the 2031 clean tech scenario. And we have assumed a merit order dispatched and typical generation responses in a megawatt per 0.1 hertz. And there's really two key messages that I want you to take away from this. One is that the generator primary frequency response has been declining since 2019, and we expect it to continue to decline as more renewable generations come onto the system. And secondly, we expect to see an increase with more time per year where the loss of a supply contingency, whether that's a generator or intertie tripping, could result in under-frequency load shedding, which would be obviously tripping off of customers for frequency excursions. And it's important, as you can see, that we are really already at, you know, in the risky area of under-frequency load shed. So this is going to be a priority for us, as we'll need to take action to ensure the frequency response capability meets our current needs, as well as into the future. And this will be assessed in our 2023 reliability roadmap. Now, moving forward to the inertia, I want to talk about inertia. So inertia is another critical, important reliability factor. Again, it's critical for responding to contingencies. We have analyzed the inertia on our system. And, you know, the key messages on this slide is that we have a small number of hours that you can see at which we think the system is at risk. Now, we've have really determined that around 45 gigavolt ampere seconds is where the system is we believe, at risk. And so that is an estimation based upon where we have seen, you know, under-frequency load shedding events occur. And so we're really low-risk area at this time. But, you know, as the renewable penetration continues to grow, we expect the inertia to continue to fall, and the risk will continue to grow, at which we're less than the 45 gigavolt amperes on that. So again, this is an area that we're going to be addressing in our reliability roadmap to deal with the declining inertia that we're foreseeing. The next slide is all around system strength. And so system strength in the power system is really important. And it is, you know, it's really a local characteristic of the power system. And as renewable generation concentrates in regions, these regions will see a decline in system strength. And, you know, on this slide, we're showing short circuit ratio relative to inverter-based generation integrating to the system. Short circuit ratio is often used as an index for system strength. And this chart shows that correlation. And you can see a fairly large reduction in the system strength as renewable generation volumes increase. And as the system becomes weaker, that can lead to reliability issues such as undamped voltage or even power oscillations on that. So we're going to be looking at in depth into this, and we'll also identify this within our reliability roadmap. Now I want to just discuss about net demand variability. So that's another important area that we have. This chart is from our flexibility report. And I'm not going to go into a lot of details on this slide, but the key messages here are that the ramp sizes will increase in average size, and in the frequency of occurrences of those ramps are also going to increase. So we are currently able to manage the existing ramps that we're experiencing, but as they increase in both size and frequency, we do expect challenges, to occur from that perspective. And so we are going to be updating the ramping analysis using the net zero scenario, and we'll incorporate that into our reliability roadmap. So with that, I think that's the high level slides on those reliability domains. And so I'm going to turn it over to Mary France, but I'm not certain if we want to take this time to maybe switch the presentations, as we have probably one slide that's off on that. That would help everyone.
Yeah, I think if we could just take a moment to switch, that'd be great, Rob. And then while we do that switch, we can check to see where we're at, if we have any questions on what's been presented thus far.
Yeah, feel free to raise your hand and I can unmute you on this side, and we can go ahead and answer any clarifying questions from the first portion of the presentation. Um, Looks like we have one written in.
Yeah, I think the question is, what time period does the ramp size is the does the ramp size relevant to? Oh, there we go. It's been answered. The 50 megawatt is a 10-minute time period. The others are 1 hour.
Perfect. Any other questions?
Okay. I don't see any.
Can you see the screening, Mary Grant?
I can, yeah. And so we just need to progress to our slide. Perfect. All right. Thanks so much. And so as Rob has laid out, it is clear that we need to move forward with addressing our declining frequency response capability in parallel to our reliability roadmap work. So because this is such an important thing for us to address quickly, we will be doing both of those pieces of work in parallel. So if we can move to slide 19, the next slide. So the following slide shares the primary drivers as to why frequency response capability is our first priority. And so we will walk through why frequency response is a growing concern and provide a bit more detail on how we assess the reliability risk. So if we can move to the next slide, please. So we previously mentioned that under frequency load shedding or UFLS, triggering UFLS is a violation of our reliability standards. It is the reliability risk that we are managing. When we have a sudden loss of supply, tripping generation, or losing an intertie while importing, the frequency drops rapidly, as you can see in the first part of this graph. You need to offset the power loss with another power source to restore the frequency. That would help to bring the supply into balance again with the load. If it doesn't recover fast enough, we have to trigger our reliability safety net, which is UFLS, dropping load in order to stabilize the system. So the less inertia on the system at the time, the faster the rate of frequency drop and the lower the frequency will go, resulting in a more difficult recovery. And so that's what we're trying to articulate here on this graph. On the next slide. In Alberta, we have four different scenarios we need to ensure that we don't trip UFLS for. Two of them are associated with the loss of supply within Alberta, and two are associated with the loss of interties while importing. And so we're going to take some time to walk through these scenarios briefly. So we're now on slide 22. So for the first scenario, intertie inrush is the constraining reliability factor. When connected and we have a sudden loss of supply within Alberta, power rushes in instantly from our neighbors, restoring the frequency quickly. The total flows on the interties, however, cannot exceed physical or system limits. We manage the risk of exceeding the intertie limits by having an MSSC inrush margin on the interties that can accommodate the instant inrush. And I believe, just to make sure that we're clear, the MSSC, for those that may not know, is the most severe single contingency. The MSSC inrush margin on the interties does reduce import capability. On slide 23, we look at the second scenario. Frequency response is the constraining factor. When we are connected and we lose the BC intertie, we trip MATL as well because it has limited ability to handle the inrush levels. The resulting loss of both intertie causes a rapid frequency drop. We need to have enough inertia as well as primary frequency response and LSSI to offset the power loss and keep the frequency above the UFLS trigger limits. As you can see on the diagram, having frequency response mitigation in place helps the frequency response. That's the difference between the two curves, the orange versus the blue. On slide 24, the third scenario is the frequency response is, the constraining factor. In this scenario, we can only rely on a response from the Alberta resources. The internal Alberta frequency response, including inertia, must be sufficient to offset the loss of MSSC. And we won't be going through the first scenario because it is, because as we did, we will not be going through it because it doesn't, it gets tripped in that scenario. On slide 25, I think that's where we're at here. Is that right? Yes. As we indicated previously, we will see declining inertia and frequency response capability as renewable penetration increases. This means that all else being equal, the existing MSSC limit of 466 or 425, depending on whether we're islanded or not, will be harder to absorb. It also means for existing import levels, we will need more LSSI to offset the declining frequency response. The MSSC inrush margin will not need to change as the MSSC limit is not changing. And so now I will turn things over to Rob to continue the discussion.
Great. Thanks, Marie-France. So we do have other initiatives that we've been working through, and I want to try to help everyone understand how these activities connect the frequency response capability and to each other. So I'm on slide 27, and in the upcoming slides, we're going to discuss frequency response and its connection to some initiatives that we have going on. So one being the MSSC, other being intertie restoration, and another being the MADL back-to-back DC converter, which has been identified within our LTP as a potential solution to help as well on that. And so over the past several years, you know, we've been speaking to each of these items, separately, but it's critically important to understand that all of these topics, they are tightly linked, and they all come back to the ISO's need to manage frequency on the system. And so while we may continue to address these items discreetly, we will be taking a holistic view as we move forward with the assessments. The interrelated nature of each of these items is really important to understand from today, as a change in one area impacts each of the other areas on that. So first, I just want to move to talk about MSSC. So as Marie-France mentioned, that's the most severe single contingency, which is loss of supply within Alberta. And that's the loss of supply that the power system can reliably absorb. And currently we have an MSSC, and it's a static limit of 466 megawatts. That static limit is applied every hour of the year, so 8,760 hours of the year, regardless of the actual output of the largest unit or the largest loss of supply, meaning if you have multiple generators on a transmission line, if you lost that transmission line, we'd limit that to 466 as well on that. So, so to account for the loss of the largest contingency, so to account for loss of 466 megawatts, I mean, it is 100% mitigated by the MSSC inrush margin on the tie lines, as previously mentioned by Marie-France. So we lose that largest generator, that current is going to come flowing across the interties instantaneously. And this is important to, just going to advance slides here. So this is important to understand from that concept. And so what I want to highlight here, and now I'm on to slide 29, is to talk about a scenario at which if we increased MSSC, and so I want to try to show the connection between MSSC and intertie restoration here. So if we look to increase the MSSC, we will need to do two different mitigation measures. The first one being we'll need additional frequency response capability within Alberta for when we are islanded or for when the tie line trips. So in those situations, we will see a frequency excursion within Alberta, and so we will need additional frequency response capability to manage that. The second being when we're connected to WEC, we would need additional MSSC inrush margin to ensure that the ties don't trip. So if we have we lose that MSSC within Alberta when we're connected, again, that inrush current comes across the ties, we need to ensure that those tie lines don't trip. And we can do this by, you know, lowering the import TTC on our AC ties, or there could be some other very fast supply injection within Alberta that can reliably offset that inrush current because we want to stay connected. And so I want to stress that we don't just need one of them, we actually need both of them. And so within this example, you'll see that an increase in the MSSC limit up to 750 megawatts, just a number we've chosen, pointing out that we would need additional frequency response services. It would likely be a megawatt of frequency response services for every megawatt of increase in MSSC. And we'd need additional capability to manage that inrush. And again, depending upon what constraining factors could be, that's likely around a megawatt per megawatt as well. If we chose to lower the TTC, you can see in this example that the BC TTC would be reduced from 800 to 200, and the MATL would go from its 310 down to 240. So that's really the key messages that I wanted to explain on that slide. Now, if I go to next slide, so I want to talk about intertie restoration. So for intertie restoration, we are focused on both better utilizing the existing capability of the interties, as well as restoring the capability of the interties up to their path ratings. So in BC's case, that's the 1200 megawatts. And so I want to highlight that the existing capability of the BC and MATL intertie, it is currently limited by the lack of frequency response service. The loss of the LSSI, which is our load shed service for import. So it's a lack of frequency, which is a frequency service within response service within Alberta. And we use that service to help enable imports. And then for restoring the capability, there's other limitations really on the system in terms of voltage stability and some asset ratings that we need to take care of. So we're going to go into these a little bit more further on the next slides. So I want to turn to slide 32, and this is about optimizing the existing import capabilities. So it's important to understand that the maximum combined BC MATL ATC or available transfer capability is 1,045 megawatts. So you can see that by the dotted line on the chart. And ATC is shared between the ties, BC and MATL. And the ISO, we use LSSI as a tool to manage frequency risk. So import capability can be increased. And the level of ATC in any hour is also based upon how much LSSI we have available within Alberta. And if we don't have enough LSSI, then we have to reduce ATC. So what this chart is trying to show you is that in 2021, the percentage of time that the combined ATC and the combined ATC imports, and you can see that the current LSSI levels do limit our ability to attain our maximum system ATC. So in this example, additional frequency response capability like LSSI or some other technologies would enable greater utilization of the existing import capability. And go to slide 33. So this is a further optimization, capability of the ties. And so if you recall, we talked about, we have a static 466 megawatt MSSC. And that applies 8,760 hours of the year. And you can see within this time frame, when you look at the actual operations of the system, there is a component of time at which the system does not have an MSSC, an actual MSSC of 466 megawatts. So one could consider a dynamic MSSC limit. And so from that perspective, you can see there's a potential opportunity to optimize. And so we'll again be looking at that through our reliability roadmap. So now on to the BC intertie and restoring the interties. So we have shared our plans in the past to restore the BC intertie. So what this slide does is it explains the current system, current system limits and the asset limits, and how we have two projects that we've shared. One is called AIR, which is the Alberta BC intertie restoration, and CRPC, which is Chaparral to Pincher Creek, and how that's going to help restore the BC intertie. So the BC intertie is currently thermally limited to 1200 megawatts, and there's a voltage stability limit, in the same range there, resulting in a TTC of 800 megawatts when you account for the 466 MSSC. Now, what the AIR project does is it will increase the thermal limit up to about 650 megawatts, but there still is a voltage stability limit around 1400 megawatts. And when you apply the MSSC inrush, that would increase the TTC to around 1,000 megawatts. In addition to that, the Chaparral to Pincher Creek project, so that now starts to increase the voltage stability limit up to around 1,600 megawatts and would enable moving the BC TTC up to around 1,200 megawatts, again, given consideration to the 466 MSSC. So I wanted to kind of share that so you can see the connection to MSSC. It's also important to highlight that at this higher TTC, that we would then even need more frequency response capability to import at these levels. So we'd need more fast frequency response or additional LSSI I also want to say, as previously shown, to get up to these levels, we already know that we currently don't have enough LSSI to maximize the efficiency. And so what this is telling us is that we want to place our priority on enabling the existing capability, followed then by restoring of the capability of the ties. Now, this next slide, on slide 35, what I want to try to show here is the effects of increasing the MSSC on the interties. So I'll focus on the right-hand part of this chart, of this illustration. So if we raised MSSC up to 750 megawatts, we would require higher MSSC inrush margin, which then would require a lower TTC. So and as Marie-France mentioned earlier, MSSC is going to inrush, but 80% of that is going to come across the BC tie. And so we need to provide that margin. And so you can now see the TTC would drop to 1,000 megawatts in that example. Now I want to touch on the effects of the MATL back-to-back DC converter. Going to go to the next slide here. So on slide, let me just make sure on the right slide here. Yeah, slide 37 for everyone. So the ISO in our past LTPs, we have identified the MATL back-to-back as a tool to help improve frequency response capability and to enable the further capabilities of the ties. And so installing the MATL back-to-back, what it does do is it de-links electrically, or isolates MATL from BC, and it is no longer, as it will no longer have an AC synchronous connection. And so what this would mean is that all of the MSSC inrush margin that we previously talked about, that's going to come across the BC tie. And so what we'd end up doing is that's going to have to be supplied, that margin will have to be supplied from BC, resulting in even a lower TTC. So given today's system, their TTC is 800 megawatts. If we had the MATL back-to-back, that TTC from this example would drop to around 700 megawatts as we'd have to account for all of that coming across the BC tie. However, it's important to note that the allocation of ATC would no longer be required. So right now, ATC is allocated between BC and MATL. That allocation would no longer be required, as 100% of that ATC will be allocated to BC. And so the key message here is that the MADL back-to-back would not reduce the MSSC inrush margin requirements that we have. So we still have to account for that. And you know, we also may need additional LSSI services, or we would not, sorry, need additional LSSI services, because now we're just accounting for covering for the BC imports on that, not the combined level from that perspective. And I guess one other thing to point out with the MADL back-to-back is it does have some other potentials for us to consider. And that would be, you know, due to the, the DCs, the special DC controls, is it potentially could provide some other options for us when it comes to, you know, loss of supply within Alberta, is its ability to provide, fast response through DC control systems. And so with this slide here, so I'm on slide 38. Another factor with the MADL back-to-back is that it would actually result in, even though the TTC is lower, it would actually result in more ATC being available on the BC tie. And this is, again, because 100% of it is being allocated to BC. So the orange line here shows the average ATC that BC actually had during the months. And so this chart here is for 2021. And this is on the existing system, of course, with no back-to-back. And then what the blue line is to represent is with MADL back-to-back and the 100% allocation to BC, the average ATC BC would have a difference there. And that difference, the average in that is in the green bars below. So you can see how the BC tie would have additional ATC from that perspective. So this value represents an increase in BC's ATC that would occur with the MADL conversion. So with that, I'm going to now turn the floor over to Miranda to talk about the next section about improving frequency response, how we go about improving frequency response capability.
Great, thanks very much, Rob. And I will maybe pause for just a second because we're sort of shifting from explaining the various challenges technical issues to shifting a little bit towards actions. And so I'll pause briefly and see if there's any questions that we haven't responded to that it would be an appropriate time for. And otherwise, I'm going to spring forward.
We have a hand raised. Would you like to address that question quickly? Ed, I'm going to unmute you if you can ask your question.
Great, thank you. Ed DePels with DeepBell Consulting. Rob, just on the MSSC, given the complexities that you talked about and the link between the MSSC and these other projects and buying more fast frequency response for LSSI, what kind of time frame would an increase in MSSC do you think occur in? Are we years and years away?
So obviously, we've had some engagement on MSSC and increasing that, and the takeaway that the ISO has is that we're working on an MSSC options paper, and so our team is currently working through that options paper. Looking at this holistically, as you can see, the connection to all this work, and we're going to be coming out with that in Q3 of this year, and then engaging on that. So, yeah, so I think it's kind of that's what our plan is right now on that. I don't know if Mary France or Miranda, if there's anything to add into that.
No, I think you got it.
Okay. Thanks for your question, Ed.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I think we have one additional raised hand here. Megan, I will unmute you if you can unmute on your end.
Great, thank you. Yeah, Megan Gill here with Capital Power. I guess just following on Ed's question, and maybe you'll talk about it kind of more in some of the next steps, but I'm curious, you've identified kind of these three areas that you're looking into to kind of resolve the the higher level issue, like with MMSSE and the intertie, and the back-to-back, but do you have any kind of more information on what you're prioritizing between these three, or is that to come out in the roadmap next year? And I have one follow-up question too.
Yeah, so Megan, that's a great question. I think we'll talk about next steps very, like, so Miranda is going to talk about a few things and then we're going to talk about next steps. And so I might just ask to hold your question and see when we go through that, if that helps to answer. And then if it does not, we can definitely address it again.
Sure. No, that sounds good. And then I just have a kind of a clarifying question for you, Rob. So you talked about when connected to kind of WEC, I think it's slide 29. When you increase the MSSE, you have to lower the inrush margin, increase the inrush margin to lower the import TTC, or have kind of some type of fast supply injection. But then you kind of clarified saying it would actually be both that would be needed. And then kind of later on, I think slide 35, you're talking about increasing the MSSE again, you'd have to lower the TTC unless there's something else fast enough. So that kind of sounds like maybe there is a situation where it would be kind of either or, but just wanting to get a bit more color on that.
Yeah, good question, Megan, on that. So yeah, so what I want to try to get across is that when we're you know, islanded, or we lose the trip, or we lose the tie, with that will create a frequency disturbance within Alberta. And so we need a service that can respond to the frequency disturbance. So monitoring the frequency and acting according to the frequency. And so we need to procure that. And then when we're obviously interconnected and you lose it, and we have the MSSE, the contingency within Alberta, that creates that inrush across the tie. And so we need a service to either lower the TTC or have a fast responding supply injection to ensure that we don't trip the tie line. And so we would need them both, but they would be either or would be utilized, if you will, depending upon the event. But we would need to ensure that we have them both. Does that help, Megan?
Yep, that's helpful. Thank you.
Okay, I think we can move on, Miranda. Thank you.
Great, thanks. So, Rob, maybe I'll ask you to jump back to slide 39. And we can start moving forward. So you've heard from both Rob and Marie-France. So you've heard Marie-France say that frequency response is our first priority. And I think, as you could see from the graphic that Rob showed you, how frequency response is really what ties all of these various things together that we've been talking about for the last couple of years. And we clearly are already seeing challenges related to frequency response manifesting. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how we want to move forward there. So we'll move to slide 40. And link you back, for those of you who have taken a few minutes to peruse the ISO strategic plan on our website, really addressing our frequency response challenges hits on three key objectives within our strategic plan. One is around grid resilience, one is around grid optimization, and the other is around enabling the transformation. And so by having additional frequency response capability and ensuring that we can manage that area reliably, that ensures that we won't have load shed UFLS excursions due to frequency response issues, or we'll, you know, minimize those to only the most extreme situations, because as was said, that is a violation of reliability standards, enabling better use of the intertie, and enabling the connection of increased renewables. And so frequency response really is what ties all of this together. And if I move to the next slide, and this is a pretty busy slide, so bear with me for just a moment. But as we look at the methods that we use from a frequency response perspective, and this shows at the top of the slide reliability across a lengthy time frame, and frequency response really is sort of in a very short time frame. And we have three ways that today we get the reliability that we need from the fleet in Alberta. We do that through the energy market. There are a number of things that are inherently provided to support reliability in the energy market. We get it through the ancillary service market and specific ancillary service procurements that provide very specific functionality. And of course, we use rules, technical requirements, and procedures as well to manage all of those things. And so as we move forward, these are the tools in our toolbox. These are the ways that we will be exploring how we get the reliability needs that we have, and frequency response is no exception to that. And so if we jump to the next slide, which is a different version of the same slide, you'll see that while the first thing we will always do is understand what inherent frequency response exists on the system and how is that changing through time, and understanding that, we also want to take a more holistic look at frequency services in the ancillary services space. So today, we explicitly have LSSI, which is Load Shed Service for Imports, for those of you unfamiliar with it, which is quite a niche product that is very specific. It's specifically provided by Load, and it is specifically enabled to support increasing the amount of imports on the intertie. And we're currently doing a pilot project with what we've termed FFR, fast frequency response, which in effect is exactly the same product as LSSI, but we're testing the ability for it to be provided by batteries. And so one of the things that we'll be looking at as we understand our frequency response needs is we will be looking at what might we be able to do from that, from a product perspective. Again, looking at it holistically, what do frequency response services need to support? What might be able to provide them? And how do we use competitive forces to obtain those things? And then, of course, we would also be looking at rules and procedures and technical requirements in complement to that. So I think, you know, for any of these reliability challenges, we really do always look across all three of these possibilities to understand what comes through the energy market, what explicitly needs to be procured as an ancillary service, and what rules, requirements, procedures might we need to have in place to manage all of this. And so Marie-France is going to take you through some next steps, and you'll see some of the ways, because as she said, we're planning to move forward because we know that this is an immediate need. We're planning to move forward with next steps in the frequency response space while we're still assessing some of these other challenges that we're facing. And Marie-France, with that, I'll hand things back over to you.
Great. Thanks, Miranda. So yeah, we'll take a little bit of time to talk about next steps, and that'll be the last section, and then we'll open it up for some Q&A. And so we are already working on developing a 2023 reliability roadmap to bring all of the reliability analysis together for each reliability domain. We'll update the analysis for the Renewable Rush net zero scenario and develop an action plan to address any current or pending reliability gaps we identify from this analysis. So we are already working on that, and we have plans to share that roadmap in the first half of 2023. And we will engage stakeholders in their feedback on the roadmap so that we can incorporate the feedback into our 2024 reliability roadmap. So I believe Rob at the beginning touched on how this will become an annual report that you can expect. The recent flexibility report is a solid foundation for this work. We, of course, continue to engage similar jurisdictions, and I know there was a few questions about that, like Ireland, Texas, Hawaii, Australia, to learn from them. We know that our systems are not exactly the same, but we know that many of these have already reached higher renewable penetration levels and have had to take reliability actions already. And so we want to learn from them. given the current frequency response capability challenges and the expected growing challenges that we described today, we will be working a more detailed analysis and action plan in the second half of this year in parallel with the other work that we're doing on the reliability roadmap. So now on to the next slide, which is slide 45 for those following on their phones. So stakeholders can expect the release of a more detailed MSSC options paper in the later half of this year. This will be a fairly robust discussion paper sharing our more detailed analysis and various mitigation options that could be considered to address the incremental reliability challenges associated with a higher MSSC limit, including incremental frequency response capabilities. So we touched on them today at a high level, and the paper would have more detail. We will look forward to your fulsome feedback on this paper and use that feedback into our decision-making on changes, if any, to the current MSSC limits. And we will be making these decisions in 2023. So the next slide, 46. To obtain additional frequency response capability, we will be assessing what we expect the energy market to provide, and Miranda talked about that, into the future from a frequency response perspective. We will also determine if any technical rules need changing, and we will be analyzing what types and volumes of frequency response capability we will need. Miranda touched on it, but to elaborate, from a procurement perspective, we are taking a more holistic look at frequency response. LSSI is a niche product, only supplied by loads and only to support imports. So currently the LSSI contracts expire at the end of 2024. A procurement process will be run for frequency response in 2023 in order to have what we need in place at the start of 2025. Learnings from the fast frequency response pilot that is currently ongoing will also be incorporated into that procurement. We will be launching an RFI in Q4 of this year to seek additional potential solutions to our frequency response capability needs and look forward to your innovative proposals to that RFI. We will, of course, incorporate any RFI learnings into the 2023 procurement process, as well as any additional frequency response solutions that we might pursue. The ISO, and just a point of note, the ISO has discussed this RFI process with the Canadian Infrastructure Bank, and they are open to exploring with participants potential financing opportunities for any projects that might be submitted under that RFI that would align with their mandate and conditions. Next slide, 47, please. And so we'll leave these key takeaways for you to soak on while we open up the floor for some Q&A. So again, just the major key takeaways are the reliability roadmap that we're working on, that we're working the frequency response needs in parallel, and that because that is our first priority, and that you will have an opportunity to engage in an MSSC options paper before the end of 2022. Thank you all. And I think we'll open it up for some questions.
And just a note to participants, we've been answering some of the Q&As as we go. So if you just go show all under the Q&A button, you'll be able to see those questions that have already been provided a written response. So if there's anyone that wants to raise a hand and ask a question, I'll happily unmute you. We do have one written in the Q&A box if you'd like me to start there. Sure, this one is from Astrid Schneider. She says, is there a long-term plan to avoid full dependency on gas generation when renewables like solar and wind are not available and avoid energy shortfall / high prices like in Germany?
Yeah, so I see Dennis is actually typing an answer. It looks like he's in the midst of typing an answer on that one.
I stopped. I was going to pass this one to Miranda to
I can do
take
that.
A shot at from a market perspective.
Sure. So I think at a high level, what's really important to note is that we don't, we have an open competitive market and we don't dictate or centrally plan what gets built in Alberta in terms of types of generation. And so that's question number one, you know, or answer number one to this question is that we have no intent to start doing that either. You know, we firmly believe in allowing a competitive marketplace to work. That said, and I think I might cue Marie France to jump in on this one as well, is we are recognizing that as we've been transitioning away from coal, our dependency on natural gas has increased. And we are doing, you know, back to linking to our strategic plan, grid resilience is really important. And so Marie France and her team have been doing a significant amount of work with the gas industry to help mitigate potential risks there. And Marie France, I don't know if you want to speak to that.
Yeah, just maybe a little, Miranda. So thank you. We have, so operationally, there's been a lot of work that we've been doing between the team here at the ISO and the team at NGTL that's part of TC Energy. And so we've been doing a lot of work to make sure we're operationally coordinated, especially after we saw what happened in Texas. We're taking some good measures to make sure that we're well coordinated here within Alberta. And so there's a lot of work that has been done to do that. We also have an executive or an external steering committee that has participants throughout, both again from NGTL, ourselves, and various industry players, including the generators, to talk about the gas and the dependency that the electrical system now has on that, and to make sure that we're doing all that we can so that is as robust as possible. And so, that's not the topic of today, but if there's any other questions, happy to entertain them at another time.
Wonderful, thank you. There's another written question here that came in from Ethan. In the future, how does the ISO anticipate managing the intermittency of LSSI offers currently seen by the existing LSSI providers?
I think I'll take that one again. So one of the things that, you know, I said earlier that we're wanting to take a holistic look at our frequency response needs. And, you know, we're doing this pilot right now to understand what other technologies might be able to provide those kinds of frequency response services. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I think having a diversity of suppliers of a product helps to mitigate, you know, the challenge that we have today is that a number of our suppliers of LSSI are loads that are also price responsive. And so when we are in a situation where prices in the energy market are relatively high or above whatever their typical response level is, then they're not available to provide LSSI if they're not consuming. And so that's the challenge we have today with a product that is effectively as niche as LSSI is. And I think taking a more holistic look at it, trying to diversify the providers of our frequency response services will help to manage that in the future.
Perfect. Thank you. A question here from Megan Gill. I understand the MSSC options paper and consultation is expected Q3, Q4. Does this mean we can still expect the paper to be released in September with consultation to follow in Q4, or has that date shifted?
Yeah, thanks, Megan, for your question. Our plan is to still have it, in September. Late September might be early October, from that perspective. So we're actively working on it right now, but that is our plan. It could be, it's late September for sure. Might squeak into October, but then we would do the consultation to follow.
Okay, that's it for written submissions for Q&A. And again, if you want to see all the previous responses, just go show all and you'll be able to see the historic provided answers. We do have a raised hand. If I'll jump over to that. Ethan, if you can unmute on your side.
Am I coming through all right?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, just a follow-up. Would ASO considering indexing the frequency products to pool price, similar to like the existing regulating reserve, spinning reserve, et cetera? kind of combat that price sensitivity we see currently?
I don't know that we've explicitly looked at that, Ethan. I think as we move forward and look at how we satisfy the requirements and who the players are and what the technologies are and how they all function, I think, you know, in a holistic look at things, there's nothing that's off the table. But no, that's not something that we've contemplated in the past.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for the insight. That's very helpful.
Thank you, Ethan. No further raised hands over here, unless anyone else has a question that we want to jump to. And no Q&A written at this time. So I think if there's no last comments, Rob, I can hand it over to you. And again, if there's anything that comes up to mind here, we can still take a moment and answer those.
Great. Thanks, Jen. Well, so again, if there's no further questions, I would like to, on behalf of Mary France, Miranda, and myself, I'd like to sincerely thank everyone for your participation today and for your time and for the great questions that we have. We truly appreciate your engagement and your questions. It's important for us to understand your questions on this. And hopefully the session was valuable for you. It was mainly meant as a session to improve our understanding of the issues and the reliability challenges that we're foreseeing, connection to the interrelated nature of these new challenges and the ISO's plan to develop a reliability roadmap. So I would also like to extend a thank you to Miranda and Mary France and Jennifer and Dennis. And there was a large team that helped us prepare for this session today. So there's lots of work that's gone into it with many staff behind the scenes. So with that, Jen, is there any other questions?
No raised hands. I just launched a poll for all the participants. If you'd like to take a moment and just share your thoughts and feedback with us on that, we can use that for future sessions. So thank you for taking the time to do that.
Yeah, no, thanks for that, Jen.
No questions, no raised hands.
Okay, well, with that, we will close this session and I wish everyone a great rest of their week. And we'll be talking more on these issues, I'm sure. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.